All right, I'm Israel, an alcoholic. I forgot to say that. And tonight, our speaker comes to us from Visalia. I think a lot of you probably already know him. He's pretty famous in town. He's got 33 years of sobriety. Yeah, man. His home group is the Monday Night Alano Club. And something interesting about him, he is a four-time cancer survivor. And he's been through it all and didn't have to drink. Can't wait to hear the story. Give it up for Charles M.
Hello. My name's Charles. I'm a repaired alcoholic. I'll get into why they call me a repaired alcoholic a little later, but, you know, I'd like to welcome y'all, regardless of why you're here. Somebody thinks you need to be here. Either you do, the courts do, your significant other does, but somebody does. And the reason I welcome you is because if you do this program, the 12 steps, and I don't care which program you're in, is there anybody here that's never been high on anything except alcohol? That's what I thought. You're my people. You know, when I was about 20 years sober, I made a list of substances that I've been loaded on. And I got to 20. And I got to tell you that one of those included Midol. I was in the military, and I was broke. And I just, you know, we went to me and my buddy Craig, who's since passed away, but we went to a pharmacy and stole some Midol. I mean, if it'll help a period, it's got to get you loaded, right? Well, it didn't. We ate the whole damn ball between the two of us. And nothing happened, but I haven't had a period since. Anyway, you know, congratulations to you people that got chips. You know, be proud of your sobriety. It's important. It really is. I've got 12,220 days today. There's only one reason that is, and you guys, some of you that go to meetings where I go, you've heard me say this 100 times. It's the first sentence in chapter 5. Rarely have we seen a person fail as thoroughly followed our path. The path is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just that simple. You do the work, you stay sober. You don't do the work, you get loaded. Been watching it for a long time. You know, I didn't start drinking particularly early. I was 15. But, you know, if they'd had psychiatrists back then that had been watching me, they'd have said, this is a future alcoholic. Just because of my attitude, my dislike for authority, you know, just all kinds of stuff, man. But anyway, for whatever reason, I'm going to date myself here. The summer of 1963, me and a friend each rolled up two cans of Colt 45 in our sleeping bags and snuck it up to Huntington Lake. And I don't know if you've ever drank Colt 45. They don't make it anymore. But warm, hot Colt 45 tastes like horse piss. Excuse my French. Anyway, so, you know, we get out there, we get away by ourselves, and we get these cans, and I open that can, and I took a drink out and spit it out. I mean, God, how do you drink this crap? And the guy said something that I remember very clearly. He said, just drink it until you feel it. And I had no idea what that meant. You know, I'd never felt any mind-altering substances in my life. But anyway, you know, my parents used to have cocktail parties, and I tasted, my dad drank martinis, you know, and it tasted like gasoline and rubbing alcohol. You know, I just never could figure out. I didn't like beer. I never could figure out why people drank. But that night at Huntington Lake, after a half of a Colt 45, I knew exactly why people drank. You know, I really had a spiritual awakening that night. I discovered that my whole life, the problem was I had an alcohol deficiency. So I started drinking as often as I could. And back then, it's a little different than this nowadays. You know, if you wanted to get liquor back then, you had to plan days ahead of time. You know, you had to get the money together. You had to find somebody to buy your liquor for you. You had to go find a place to drink. You know, it was complicated. But we did it. Anyway, you know, my disease was real late blooming. I don't know why that is. I have no answer for that question. But I drank for a long time with no adverse. You know, I wasn't getting drunk drivings. I wasn't going to jail. You know, my marriage was okay. My first one, she was a drug addict, so I divorced her ass. You know, anyway, she was doing all my dope. Anyway, you know how that is, you know. And there's a, you know, you can tell the difference between an alcoholic and a drug addict. It's really easy. An alcoholic will steal your shit, but a drug addict will steal it and then help you look for it. You know, I drank, you know, as much as I could during high school, but it was pretty difficult. I'd smoked a joint the summer of after I graduated in 1966, and I went in the military. And it was funny because in the military, I could legally buy beer at 18 at the PX, but there's no place I can go drink it legally. But, you know, I'm an alcoholic. That didn't stop me. But anyway, you know, I started drinking a lot in the service. And one time, the only saving grace there is they have 3-2 beer. You know, it's the alcohol content's less. So I bought a case of Pearl beer, and that tastes somewhat similar to Hot Coke 45. And I went to this party, and I set that case down, and I drank the whole damn case. You know, I don't know how long it was. It was hours. But I thought, wow. You know, Charlie, you might have a drinking problem. You shouldn't be able to drink that much. So I quit drinking. But I kept doing dope. You know, I didn't drink alcohol for 2 years after that. But eventually, I found a reason to start drinking again. And then, because I'm a real alcoholic, and alcohol is actually my drug of choice, you know, I started drinking as often, more often, and more often, and more often. But, like I said, my disease didn't progress. You know, I got out of service. I got a job driving a truck and got enough money. I put myself through college. I got a good job. You know, I got married. You know, things were good, man. I was just drinking and going through life, having a ball. But the thing is that my drinking was progressing, and I didn't know it. You know, I'd always drank a lot, and I always drank as often as I could, but I suffered no collateral damage, and, you know, drinking is just not a problem. Well, that changed. You know, somewhere after 20 years of drinking, I have no idea when, I lost the ability to control my drinking, and I started getting drunk when I didn't want to get drunk, and I started going places I shouldn't have been, doing things I shouldn't have done. And it got ugly. You know, I would have these arguments with myself. I don't know if any of you have ever done that. But, you know, I live with a killer. And it's between my ears. And I don't know why this is. My brain is too freaking stupid to know that my body is its life support system. Because it keeps trying to kill me. Overdose me. I mean, I've done that a few times. Anyway, the drinking thing, you know, I was having those arguments with myself, and, you know, I wasn't going to work a lot, and I wasn't home with my family. I had 2 young children by that time, second marriage. We all have plural marriages, you know, I mean, it's just the way it is, but anyway, you know, my wife called me on the table. And she said, you know, Charlie, your drinking is getting out of control. It makes me nervous when you hold the children. And at that time, I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. My baby wasn't born yet, but But you know, we had a long talk, and I made a bunch of promises. And I sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, meant what I said. And what I said was, I'm not going to get that drunk anymore. I'm going to go to the bar and I'm going to have a few drinks. I'll go out with you, I'll have a few drinks. I'll have a couple of drinks after work, maybe once in a while, and that'll be it. Well, the next day I had to go to Fresno to get some forklift parts. Well, I got this brilliant idea. Man, I'm going to stop at Riverland and have a couple of drinks, right? So I go into Riverland, I have a couple of drinks. And then my mind said, you know, Charlie, you probably should have a couple of more. And I had a couple more. And then I had a couple more. And I stumbled out of that place at 10 o'clock at night. This was 3:30 when I got there. And I took off and I said, you know, I'm pretty drunk. I don't want to go down 99, so I'm going to go out Avenue 384. And, you know, instead of going on the freeway, I went across the bridge and headed out there. And something happened, and I had no idea what was happening at the time. I do now. God started doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I pulled over on that country road out there on 384, and I started bawling. And I'm saying, you know, you just told your wife with all sincerity that you weren't going to get drunk like this anymore. And here you are. It hasn't even been 24 hours, and you're drunk on your ass. And I freaking lost it. You know, it took me 10 years to tell this story in AA. But I was crying and bawling and snot flying everywhere, man. I started punching the steering wheel and punching the dashboard. I started punching myself in the face. I mean, I know what self-loathing is. I know what self-hatred is. I was so freaking disgusted, I didn't know what to do. And then being the real alcoholic I am, I ducked down and went, God damn, hope nobody saw me do that. But, you know, I'm egotistical. Anyway, I drove home on 384, and I was having a talk with myself about this drinking. And I actually said this to myself, Charlie, this is not rocket science, man. We're talking about having a couple of drinks or not. I mean, it's really, get your shit together, dude. So I proceeded for the next several months, and I actually have no idea what period of time frame this was, because I was drunk every day. But I didn't drink during the day. I'd get off work, and I'd go to Santa Fe Station to prove I could have one drink and leave. And I got to tell you that I only, in whatever months it was before I got into treatment later, I succeeded in leaving that bar after one drink one time. Now, I introduced myself as a real alcoholic, and I am a real alcoholic. And here's an example of it. Because I had that drink, I put it down, I walked out of that bar, and I said, piece of cake. Let's go to the Green Olive and celebrate. That's what I did. I went and got drunk, we'll celebrate and have one drink. Right? Well, there was another incident a few months later, and time for me to get sober. Anyway, this was what led me to get sober. You know, I went to a friend's house, a guy that ended up drinking himself to death a couple years ago, a guy I grew up with. We were watching a Monday night football game. It was about 2:30 in the morning, and if you've watched Monday night, it gets over about 8 or 8:30, you know. But anyway, I got a little vial in one hand and a big brown bottle of Super 7 in the other hand, and I just had a big hit off of both of them. And I'm starting to, you know, having this conversation with myself again. You know, Charlie, your drinking's out of control, man. You're missing work, you're not home for your family. And I heard a voice, and this is clear as I'm talking to you right now. I have no idea where this came from. I heard this voice say, you've been drunk 14 days in a row. What makes you think tomorrow's going to be any different? And it scared the shit out of me. You know, I thought, well, maybe I'm becoming a wet brain, something, I don't know, hearing things, you know, seeing things. Anyway, what happened was God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I picked up the phone, and I called a guy that I knew had been in a treatment center and said, I need help. Three hardest words I've ever said in my entire life. I need help. I said, I just can't do this anymore. And I don't want to live. You know, I'm a vice president of a country doing $14 million worth of business a year. I got an expense account. I got credit cards. I got money, property, and prestige of bullshit, and I don't care if I live. Two young kids at home. Next day, we got together, and he called a treatment center, and about 3 weeks later, I was in that treatment center. And back then, they were teaching the disease concept of alcoholism. You know, they hadn't actually classified alcoholism as a disease yet. But, you know, this guy explained the last 25 years of my drinking in one sentence. And I drank from June 1963 to November 1988. That's when I had my last drink. But anyway, he said, you have a physical allergy to alcohol. And once you have one drink, all bets are off. You have no idea where you're going to go, what you're going to do, how long you're going to drink. You don't know anything. So me being the brilliant guy I am, I went to the dictionary and I looked up allergy. I mean, I know what an allergy is because there's a pollen that I'm allergic to and I break out hives. Alcohol never gave me hives. Gave me felonies, but not hives. Anyway, you know, the definition of an allergy, one of the definitions is I'm in a senior moment here, an abnormal reaction to a normally harmless substance. Now, I know people that alcohol, they have a normal reaction to alcohol. I used to attend bar for my parents' parties once in a while. And my mom drank Manhattans, and if you know what those are, you're old, like me. Anyway, she'd lose her drink. Who the frick loses a drink? I mean, give me a break. I knew where it was. No matter where she put it, I knew where it was. Anyway, I'd say, Mom, you want another drink? The ice is melted now. And she goes, no, I'm starting to feel it. My brain just does not know what that means. I mean, if you don't want to feel it, are you doing it? You know? Anyway, those things started making sense to me when I started working the program by Alcoholics Anonymous. And in that meeting, that guy told me that. And all that time I was going to that bar trying to prove I could have one drink and leave, all that stuff made sense to me. And all the times I tried to control my drinking, said I wasn't going to drink, and did anyway, that all made sense. I know what's wrong with me now. And the guy said, well, what do you think, Charlie? We did some inventory about my drinking, and, you know, this is a one-on-one meeting with my case manager. And he said, you an alcoholic? I don't know. Kind of looks like I might be. And he said, well, what is it? I said, what do you mean, what is it? Are you an alcoholic or not? You got to say it. And for the first time, I said, my name's Charlie, I'm an alcoholic. And everything changed at that moment. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I worked the first half of the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous in that instant. I'm powerless over alcohol. If I put it in my body, I don't have any control on what's going to happen next. So I, you know, I got serious in there, man. I looked like a geek, man. I put my black rimmed glasses on and, you know, started taking notes in all the classes, and I did everything they told me to do without argument. And a couple of things happened to me there that led me, you know, to believe how serious this disease was. A guy I had become real good friends with in treatment got out 3 days before me, and he lived down south pretty close to where I was in treatment, so he was going to come back the following Friday when I was going to get out, and we were going to get our 30-day chips together. Now, he was in there because he had two drunk driving pendings, and his attorney said, you know, if you do this recovery thing, it'll look a lot better when we go before the judge. Well, he got out Wednesday, Thursday night, he got another drunk driver. Out of treatment one day, got another drunk driver. I didn't see him. You know, I found out for some other people what happened to him, but it kind of got my attention. You know, maybe these people know what they're talking about. So I started putting a use of program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I did the first five steps down there. You know, a lot of people have trouble with the fourth step. And I'll tell you, there ain't nothing new in your fourth step. It's all in your head already. All you got to do is say it out loud. That's the healing part of this thing. You got to put it on paper and you got to say it out loud. Now, I talked about this in a meeting last Monday, you know. What? Big deal. What does that mean? I don't know. Catholics have been doing it for 4,000 years, man. It's called confession. It works for them. Alcoholic Anonymous calls it a fourth step and a fifth step, and it works for us. You know, you get rid of that freaking garbage, man. And if you don't do that, it will stay there. And it will clog your mind up, and eventually you'll figure out a reason you need to drink to shut that thing off. These 12 steps are a miracle, man. They really are. You know, I got the first half. I'm powerless over alcohol. I get that. I can't drink anymore. But I'm unmanageable? That's BS, man. I'm a vice president. I got yada, 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 you know. Well, about 3 months home, my wife brought this paper bag out, one of those big paper bags. And I said, well, what's that? And she goes, well, you might enjoy reading some of the stuff that's in there. So I dumped this bag out, and I find out I don't have car insurance. Because I decided my insurance man was a jerk, and I wasn't going to pay him anymore. You know, I found out all kinds of stuff. Bills that weren't paid. You know, God, I had things all clipped together with big notes. Handle this immediately. Just, you know, I wasn't doing life at all, man. I was drunk, and that's what I was doing. I was drinking. And I wasn't there for my family. I wasn't there for my business partner. I wasn't there for my kids. I wasn't there for anybody. But me and the Bob. You know, step two. We talked about that a lot in recovery. And I, by the way, I did find out that my life was unmanageable. If I drink, it's an unmanageable lot sometimes if I don't drink, which I haven't in a long time. But life is really screwed up sometimes. Anyway, you know, being restored to sanity. Well, I thought being insane was all the crazy stuff you do when you're drinking. But everybody does crazy shit when they're drinking. So what's being restored to sanity mean? Being restored to sanity tells me that, and I understand, the first half of step one, that I can't drink. Drink, it's insane for me to drink because of the stuff I do when I do drink. And I got to tell you, I'm a real alcoholic. That's my drug of choice. But I did a lot of shit, trust me. You know, I found substances that enhanced my drinking tremendously. You know, instead of passing out after 5 or 6 hours of drinking, I could drink for a couple, 3 or 4 days. My wife didn't really appreciate that, but, you know, that's the way it was. I found out sober that I'd put my family at risk, terrible risk. I found out after I was sober, I put myself at going to jail for multiple years. You know, for whatever reason, the people I know ended up doing stuff on an international scale. And I was on the peripheral of a lot of that stuff, you know, ran errands, stored money at my house, transported, did all kinds of shit. And one day it occurred to me that, you know, this guy was, we were getting ready to ship 800 pounds of weed to the East Coast and put a briefcase in my house, which he did all the time. You know, he lived on the East Coast. Every time he came out, put a briefcase in my house. And left it there until it was time to need it. And all of a sudden, after I'd been sober, I realized that if the wrong people found out about it, they'd have come to my house and shot my wife and my children and taken that goddamn money. But I never thought about that when I was drinking. I never thought about putting myself in line for doing 20, 30, 40 years in prison for being associated with the people I was associated and doing what we were doing. And I was in the service in Texas, and a guy named Joe Popper got 6 years in jail for a quarter of a roach in Texas. In 1967, the penalty for possession of marijuana was worse than second-degree murder. And at that time, I was having pounds of weed delivered to my footlocker You'll love this for $50 a pound. Now, if he got 6 years for a roach, what do you think I'd have got for a pound? But never realized that. Never crossed my mind. It's the same thing with my drinking. I never thought about what was going to happen when I drank. I just drank. And the shit happened that happened. And a lot of it was not good at all. You know, I'm really fortunate to be standing here today. You know, 18 years sober, my liver quit. So when you talk about wreckage of the past, you know, one of those enhancing things I used to do, I loved combinations. One of my favorite combinations was alcohol and cocaine. My next favorite combination was LSD and heroin. And, you know, back in those days, LSD was really good. Mr. Natural, you know, teardrop, all kinds of stuff. Anyway, you know, when I got tired of the buzz of being hallucinogenic, I'd just go store some dope, slam it, and then I was hallucinogenic, but I was all kick-back and mellow, you know. But I got hep C doing that. And 18 years sober, my liver quit. And I didn't really know that I had faith at that time. You know, I knew I was searching this for this God thing. I was doing a lot of praying. You know, little egotistical. When I started praying, I prayed in the shower because I didn't want my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old to see me praying. Now, that's where my spirituality was, even a little while sober. Anyway, I forgot where I was going with that, but it'll come back. Great thing about being this old, you get to meet new people every day, man. Anyway, you know, my sanity's been restored. I was working on this God thing, trying to do step 3. And, you know, my liver quit. It came back. See, I told you. Anyway, I'm going, my daughter, they've already taken my driver's license away because I got encephalopathy. And if you want to know what that means, you'll have to look it up. But basically, you don't have any idea where you are or what's going on. Anyway, we go to Stanford and get ready to check in the hotel. And I said, you know, I don't feel good, man. We need to go to the hospital. So she took me to the hospital. Time for how good it is. Anyway, they drew some blood. You know, they took me in emergency and said, what's the matter? And, of course, I look like an orange. I'm that color. And I said, well, I've got hep C. I'm on the transplant list, and I really feel bad. So they drew some blood, and they immediately put me in ICU, and they told my doctor, he's really sick, you better call a family. And they did some more blood tests, and by that time, my daughter had come back in there, and they said, we think, based on our best estimates, he's got a matter of days to live. And what she told me, they said, was 3 days. I don't remember any of this. But anyway, God's doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. The next day, there was a wreck in the Bay Area. That was a match for me. And the day after that, they gave me a new liver. But when I tell you about my spirituality, when they came back to that blood work and they told me I had just a matter of days to live, and I'd done the research on end-stage liver disease, and 9 out of 10 people die waiting on a liver. You know, you don't go gamble in Vegas with those odds, so I'm pretty sure I'm dying, you know. Anyway, laying there in that bed, this thought came to me that said, you know, Charlie, God's got a plan. You know that now. You've been sober 18 years. You got a pretty good relationship with God, and you know that he has a plan. And maybe you're not in it anymore here. And the miracle of that was I was okay with that. You know, my kids were there. My brother and sister were there. And I had a great life. You know, even through all the drunkenness, I really had a good life. And I was okay with dying. Now, I got to tell you, that's not my M.O. But a peace came over me, and I actually wrote something about this several years ago, that all of a sudden it didn't matter what the doctors told me anymore. Whatever happened was going to happen, and it was God's will, and that's the way it is, and I'm okay with that. So I get a liver transplant, and it's kind of funny because there was a lot of rumors going around in Abe that I had died, that I actually died. And they used to call me the walking dead man, before I went to meet, when I was going to meetings in end-stage liver disease. And if you want to see a picture of that, I'll show you why they called me that. It's in my phone. But we go to Arby's one day. My daughter walks in there, and I walked around this corner, and this guy just looked like he saw a ghost. And I go, what happened? And he goes, well, he apologized to me for missing your funeral. I didn't die, dude. I mean, they called me the walking dead man at AA meetings, but you know, AA is such a blessing. I mean, the longer I stay sober, the more grateful I get, and the more important my sobriety is. Because I see people relapse with multiple decades of sobriety. And I don't want any part of that, man. I don't want another drunk. I don't want to even think about trying to detox again and get sober again. What a disaster that is. You know, I don't have to tell you. You guys know. But, you know, you still see me at meetings. I'm here sharing my experience, strength, and hope. Because that's what the big book tells me I got to do. You know, I'm a big book guy. I know you guys, there are several people here to go to that Monday night meeting, and you hear me, that fucking book, read that book. That's it. It's in there. Everything is in there that you need. You know, it's the big book was written by divine guidance. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Somebody wrote a book in 1939 that worked so perfect for alcoholics today. You know, it had to be divine guidance. There's no other explanation for that. But the reason I still do all this stuff, because I don't want to drink again. And the big book tells me that if I don't do this stuff, I'm going to drink again. And I've witnessed it. You know, it's something, I get a debt of reprieve based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. That's in the book. If I get a debt of reprieve to me, that means I got to do daily maintenance of my spiritual condition. Now, you don't think I can't flash back to old behavior and heartbeat? 25 years sober. I get my dog. I got a little Springer, what the hell is it? Miniature Schnauzer. Can't wait to get old, man. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, it's in the middle of summer, and I'm going to roll down to Rite Aid and buy a birthday card. So I got the air conditioner on high, so he doesn't get hot, because it's 95, whatever it is. And I roll in there, grab a card, and roll back out, get in my truck. And it's still cool in there, you know? And there's... look over, this lady's banging on my window. I said, what? She starts talking. I said, you know, come around here. I can't hear you. I'm going to cuss, by the way, in a second. She comes around. I roll my window, and I said, what? And she just starts using your dog. And I'm starting to explain to her that I've had the air conditioner on, and it's still cool in here. And then all of a sudden, fuck you, you bitch. And I slammed the car and drive and fucked the whole ass. I don't even know if I ran over or not. I'm still looking for that lady because I need to make amends to her, right? the big difference today, I mean, a huge difference. Number one is I have a relationship with God. And I got to tell you that if you don't have that, your chances are staying sober are not good. Now, some people get mad at me when I talk about this, but this is what I believe. God took the obsession away from me in that treatment center. And it's my job to do the work to stay sober. Now, I say, well, God keeps you sober. No, he doesn't. If I want to get out of here tonight, drive to the liquor store and buy a bottle, I can. Now, he might cause an earthquake or something, but I'll figure out a different liquor store, right? If I want to drink, I'm going to drink. What God does for me is he keeps the obsession removed. So I don't think about drinking all the time. Now, do I think about drinking? Absolutely. I'm an alcoholic. It's what I did best. But the difference is that I don't obsess over it. It's a passing thought. You know, watching TV, man, I'll see something new on TV. Oh, wow, a little four-pack of two little wine bottles, right? Wonder what that tastes like. Handcuffs? I don't know. But see, I know now, with the beyond of a shadow of a doubt, that I'm powerless over alcohol. And in and of myself and by myself, I'm a drunk, and I will get drunk again if I don't do this 12 steps, practice the principles, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, a little bit about the book. You know, I never had a purpose in life. I thought I did. You know, I had some goals, but I never really had a purpose. The big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, gave me a purpose that I get to practice every day for the rest of my life. And my purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. That's what I'm doing here right now. And you know, the big book also has an objective. And it says that in chapter 4, chapter 2, the agnostic. The objective is this book is for you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem, period. That means it will take the obsession to drink and use away. Then I do the work to keep that obsession gone so I don't have to drink. That's a pretty good deal. You know, I spent a lot of time in the hospital. One of the reasons for that, as I told you earlier, my disease was late progressing. So I always worked. I was either working or dealing or both. I always had money. And I did a lot of stuff, man. I snow skied, water skied, dirt bike, played all kinds of sandlot sports. And I tore my body up. You know, I've been under anesthesia, some kind of anesthesia, over 40 times. I've got four artificial joints. I got a new liver. You know, I've had, there's no virgin orifices in my body that the hospital hasn't looked at. But one thing I discovered of all those times in the hospital is that, you know, I was on the liver ward, and I go around and talk to other liver transplant patients, but also would have the opportunity to go to the cancer ward. You know, the attorneys could have squashed all that stuff. You know, they figured out that it was illegal for you to go talk to somebody that had cancer because you survived a liver transplant. I don't get it, but that's the way it is now. But anyway, you know, I met a lot of people that were dying of their disease, exactly like I was. But I got a liver transplant. I got a new chance at life. But I'll guarantee you that I met hundreds of people that would have traded diseases with me in a heartbeat as far as my alcoholism goes. Because those people, you know, a bunch of them are going to die. And there's nothing they can do about it. But I have progressive, fatal, deadly disease that I can keep in remission simply by doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there's not one of those people that I've met in any of those hospitals that wouldn't have traded that for me in a heartbeat, man. I can keep a deadly disease in remission simply by going to some meetings, talking to a bunch of fucking drunks, you know, doing some step work. Excuse my French. I try not to cuss, but it just comes out. You know, this is another people think I'm crazy is I tell people I can't control my thoughts. And they look at me like I'm a lunatic. Because I am. The difference is I know that today. And I don't get to act on those lunatic thoughts. You know, I just get to laugh at them now. But, you know, I was posting stuff. I've been on a bunch of recovery sites over the years on Facebook. And I've been getting kicked off of most of them. You know, I found out that people in recovery that have been in recovery a long time often don't like to hear the truth. And it's not my truth. It's the truth that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This lady, I said one time, I posted this thing that said, we're all nuts. Some of us are just more often than others, right? And this lady just chewed my butt out. She said, man, she was sober 25 years or something. I haven't been sober all these years to still be crazy and sick and all that shit. And I said, really? And she goes, yeah, you're an idiot. And I said, well, have a goddamn drink and then find out what happens. You know, what I told her is, and I'm telling you right now, 33 years sober, I still have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Now, occasionally I still think like one, but I don't act on it. Well, there's that one lady in the parking lot. The big difference now is that I don't react to life. You know, I don't get my feathers all ruffled and blow up or do something really freaking stupid. I think about it. I try to put the principles of Program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I act on life, which is completely different than what I used to do. You know, people say, well, what did Alcoholics Anonymous give to you? What have you gotten since you've been sober? A lot of people say it saved my life. It did. It gave me a new life. But I'm going to leave you this one thing. Actually, there's three things. See, I'm a liar, too. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me the will to live. Because when I got here, I didn't give a damn whether I lived or died. You know, somebody to put a gun in my face, I'd have said, you don't have the ball to pull the trigger. They gave me a life to lead. You know, I know how to do life today. I knew how to do it when I was little. This alcohol took all that away. I did what my disease told me to do. And if you don't think that's the truth, man, do some inventory. I told these guys on Monday night, I said, you know, get a piece of paper and put a plus on one side and a minus on the other side. And put the plus side, put all the things your disease did for you. Or vice versa, whatever. Anyway, you know, when you're out there drinking and using, did you ever save enough money to buy a new car? You ever get a promotion? It's real simple, man. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a life to lead, that I know how to live today. You know, do I have problems? Absolutely, man. Life's life. There's some really screwed up shit that happens in this world. I lost 4 friends last year. Only one of them was sober. And they all told me that they're really glad that I got sober because I needed it. But they didn't, and they're dead. And I'm here. And the last thing that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me, a life to lead, was a faith to live by. You know, I never had faith before. But I found out that night up there in that hospital in Stamford when I was okay with dying because I knew God was going to take care of me whether I was dead or alive. I realized I did have faith, and I do have faith. And I have faith in God, who I was introduced to from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Charlie Banks. Hey, Charlie.